Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Conservationist Conversationalist. It has been a long, long time. Why are you laughing at me, Aiden?
When we started the call, I was doing so well of just being like, wow, huh, a lot of stuff happened the past few months. But then, like, once you started going, oh, this is the Conversationist Conversationalist, I feel like something inside of me just snapped and everything, like, oh, shit. Oh, so much has happened these past few months, and I feel like my brain didn't process the fact that we have an hour to talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
My name is Brandon Anyer, by the way. You are.
I'm Aiden Wood, but am I anymore? Like,
I don't know. I don't know who any of us are anymore. It has been, so this goes to tell you, our last show was March 7th, I believe you said, when you looked it up. We were talking about, as I dubbed it on the show, Blooper Tuesday. And that was basically, I think that was a time when we knew the virus was coming. I was very much in this state of disbelief of it all. So much I didn't even want to talk about it because I thought that it was being talked about too much. And I thought that maybe it was creating hysteria. Little did we know what was going to happen. Well, I mean, a lot of people did know. Not that I didn't like have that feeling. I think I just hoped with all my heart that it was just hysteria. Back then we were just really just going, oh my God, the worst thing that was going to happen was that Bernie Sanders was definitely not going to win the nomination and Joe Biden was running away with it. And here we are.
Here we are with a fascism descending all around us, and with 150,000 Americans dead, and a huge wave of evictions happening. I didn't really like feel like the impending doom of the virus until like I was on a plane to Michigan, because I was planning on going to Michigan and canvassing for Bernie to try and like turn things around for Bernie, and then I got to Michigan, and like everything shut down, and it was. It was on the flight from California to Michigan where there was, like, nobody on the flight. And, like, everyone, like, seemed dirty for being on a plane that I was like, oh, wait, this is a real thing that's happening, huh?
You know, I think the biggest mindfuck for me was that so I've been a germaphobe since I was a little kid. Like, I remember, like, having people tell me, hey, it's part of life, you just have to deal with it, right? Viruses happen, you get colds, you get flus, whatever. And I was like, no, like, as long as I have control over it, like, I'll get one every once in a while, but I remember, like, as a kid, if my brother would get sick with a cold, I would wear a mask for 2 weeks in the house. Sometimes it would work, sometimes, you know, you can only be so careful in the same household because you have to take it off at some point to eat and whatever. But, I mean, so it was weird to me when people started to talk about masks and they started to talk about all those sort of things because I was like, you'd think that it would be refreshing to me, but instead it actually had this adverse effect where I was like, why are you all going crazy? You're the ones who called me crazy for years, you know? And it was bizarre, and it still is bizarre to me so much that I thought I didn't want to talk about it in the beginning, and then I became obsessed with it, which is, I think, a natural thing for somebody who, I can't say that I'm honestly more scared of, which I totally understand how dangerous it is, but I can't say that I'm more scared of the coronavirus as I am of colds, flus, whatever, because that's been my mentality my whole life, right? So it's just stay away from it.
Yeah, because like, when you have a phobia, when you have this like natural reaction to germs like a cold and the virus, like it's all fear. It's
exactly,
like me with needles, like I like whether it's like a major injection that or like that goes like deep and like is very painful, or whether it's like a little tiny prick on my finger, like it's just like it's all just fear. That's all I can feel.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's for me it was so weird. Was that I get to look around at people who are now freaking out like I have my whole life. And I'm going, what's going on, you know? And at the same point, you know, being like feeling a little bit like of this anxiety of seeing everybody with masks, even though I'm the person who watched as Asian countries did it for years and said, that's smart during the winter, you know, is to make sure that we cut down on it. But yet, because our culture here, we see a mask, we don't see prevention. We see a mask and we see disease. And that's where I think why it's been such a crazy thing and why it's been such a, well, I mean, obviously it's been politicized as well. But, you know, and then, so I think even me having that thought of, oh, but I have no problem wearing a mask, I still have that upbringing in Western culture, which is that when I see a mask, it's scary, not, oh, that's a good thing. And I think it's been hard for the country.
It's been hard. And it's also, I feel like it's not just like seeing disease. I feel like there's also such an ingrained attitude of masks towards masks in America of, like, what are you trying to hide? Like, when we think of masks, we think of bank robbers. We think of, like, anarchists with Molotov cocktails throwing shit through bank windows. Or, like, militia members. Or, like what are you... Like, it makes people think of suspicion. And I don't know that this is still as much of an issue as it was at the beginning of the crisis, but, like, there was sort of a catch-22 that a lot of Black Americans found themselves in, where, like, if they weren't wearing a mask, they would be targeted for, like, endangering people's lives because they weren't wearing a mask. But, like, there were Black Americans who would wear a mask and would go out in public and were assumed to be criminals with something to hide, and were, like, targeted, some often violently, by, like, security guards and police in the area, which sucks. I hope hopefully, like, wearing masks becomes normalized, and that's something that I'm really hopeful for, that, like, especially when I see, like, people who put so much work into making masks that are beautiful and, like, colorful and, like, the kind of mask that people, like, want to wear and, like, want to go outside and show off. I'm really hopeful that, like, it can become an aspect of, like, just, like, American culture and society, and, like, world cultures and society, that it becomes just, like, not something that hides our individuality or, like, makes us feel disconnected from other people, but something that can be used to draw people together. So I'm optimistic, and I'm hoping that, like, the normalization of mask wearing does end up cutting back on other forms of disease, like the flu and cold, which, like, the flu does have a body count.
Yeah, absolutely,
if we can, like, there's, like, a part of me that's, like, really hopeful that, like, even though there's, like, a lot of deaths happening right now from the coronavirus, like, if wearing masks and, like, hygiene becomes so ingrained in our psyche that, like, we start doing that regularly forever, we hopefully might end up saving lives. That's, like, one of the little things that I, like, latch onto to, like, try and have a little bit of optimism. And I was reading, I take this with a grain of salt because I didn't read it super thoroughly. I was, like, reading it in bed at 2 a.m. But that, anti-coronavirus measures in South America have basically wiped out the flu.
Yeah, that's what I read, too.
Yeah, so, like, I'm really hopeful that the flu and other like, forms of communicable diseases like that.
Australia as well, by the way. It's the levels are so far down. I think that's something that somebody brought... Well, actually, even... I believe it was Fauci even who brought it up, who said that he's hopeful that the mask wearing will bring down the flu this fall and winter. So that... Because we keep hearing these... You know, not to say that, obviously, that it's terrible what's happening, but we also know the media has... You know, the media does what the media does. They sensationalize things, and they've been creating this very doom filled thing about, you know, when the flu hits and when COVID hits, it's going to create this. And the hopeful part would be that if we do the right things, that won't be the case. And, you know, and obviously we've seen COVID didn't slow down in the summer. So that's also why I would imagine would create some hope that once we get over this hurdle right now that we're currently going through, that, you know, perhaps we'll get it down to a manageable level of some sort, you know, and that might be a little bit of optimism on my part, but it is cautious optimism. I'm not, you know, a hope. I'm not planning on anything. I'm just saying that would be, you know, the hope would be there, especially since mask wearing is up so much everywhere. And what we're, you know, the problems we're seeing right now, at least in Washington, are gatherings. You know, New Jersey yesterday, you had a mansion, Airbnb mansion rented out with 700 people there, you know, without masks. I mean, that's incredibly crazy to me, because just a few weeks ago, we had an outbreak in the county I live in. And what happened was that there are people who had a 50-person get together, and they were drinking out of the same beer bong, allegedly, and that sort of thing. And a bunch of them got COVID, and thankfully they were able to, you know, contain it. And although our numbers are higher right now, the percentages are staying about the same. So I imagine that does have somewhat to do with more testing, which I guess is a good thing, because the percentage of positive tests is about the same.
Whoa, haven't you heard? More testing causes more disease. I learned that from my president.
Well, you know what else I learned from the president is that I hate that I'm talking about this because it goes against my religion, by the way, but that he believes that he could delay the election even though Congress would have to approve it. And the reason why it goes against my religion is because I think he knows darn well that he cannot do that. And it is his way of putting something out there that everybody's talking about today. And he gets the heat off of other things. Because you can't tell me that he actually thinks he can postpone the election. When, I mean, you know, he's got to have people telling him, look, dude, you can't do this. We have, even with a Republican-controlled House, I think it would be hard. But especially with a Democrat-controlled House, that seems high. Well, no, it's impossible.
Mm-hmm. So what is your religion? Are you like what a Jehovah's Witness? Like no, a Mormon?
No, I mean my religion is not speaking shit that Trump says that is meant to cause people like us to talk about it.
Yeah, and what name would you give that religion?
That religion, I would say, is the... I have to think about it because I was it's the don't fall for the Trump bullshit. Like the other day when he comes out, like for instance, what was the one that you did the other day? He comes on, was it Fox News? Probably. And he comes on and he says, he does the whole cognitive test thing, which, you know, is like, you know, woman, man, camera, TV, whatever the fuck that was. And everybody's talking about it. All the tweets, you see people putting man, woman, man, you know, camera, TV. And they're all
and
talking.
I did not understand. I didn't had no idea where that came from all of a sudden. It was like, because normally, like, not to brag, but normally, like, I know where the memes come from, you know? Like, right. I only get memes from the finest sources, so I'm very well aware
right.
of the meme origins, you know? Like, cats can't have little salami. That was from a Google search of someone searching if their cat could have salami, and it was very humorous.
It's one of my favorites, by the way, I will say too.
Yes, also, I want to wear, I have a friend who's like a neolib, shout out to Bastier on Twitch, and I want to embroider a shirt for him that says, America can have little of socialism as a treat. Not the point. The point is,
it's a nice
the whole,
little dig, I like
the
it.
Whole man, woman, person, camera, TV thing was like, I had no idea where that came from, and then it was like something related to Trump, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? Anyways.
Well, man, a couple days later, we're still talking about it. We're sharing the video of the fact that Jane Goodall did the same cognitive test with a gorilla and the gorilla passed. And like, nah, no shit. We know that. Like, we know. But I mean, like, Trump, I swear, he put that out there so that people would talk. And meanwhile, while people are still like Jeff Tiedrick and all those guys who, you know, I think love to be able to tweet about the latest thing about Trump, Mikhail Gillette, go down the list. And by the way, I love Mikhail Gillette's music, I want to say, so no offense to his music, but you know, the guy is obsessed with talk. And by the way, I stand accused. I sometimes fall for it. I tweet a lot about, you know, where I take the bait. I totally get that, but I don't believe I thrive on it quite as much as Jeff Tiedrick.
You
and
don't
Mikhail
build Gillette. A brand out of responding
right.
to Trump's
I'm not the Krasensteins.
Various antics.
The Krasensteins, R.I.P. Krasensteins, by the way, who are now who are now banned from Twitter. You know, but anyways,
what are you even talking about?
The Krasen Bros, remember?
No, like oh, we're like talking masks. About the, how did we get?
Yeah, so we got the
oh,
fact
yeah,
that Trump
delaying the election. Okay, continue.
Yeah, so they love to jump on that stuff, you know, on Twitter. And meanwhile, they're talking about this cognitive test while he's literally sending stormtroopers into Portland and Seattle and Chicago and Kansas City, Washington, D.C. And we're talking about the fucking cognitive test. You know, I don't know if he just, like, luckily stumbles upon that shit or if he actually is a genius, or if it's Barr talking to him and Stephen Miller, which that
I feel like
too.
Okay, like I know, like there's a lot of people who say like don't like say Trump's stupid. He's not stupid. He's playing you. I think that he is stupid. I just think that he's like stupid in a way that very like naturally lends itself to fascism. You know, like and he's surrounded by smart people. Like, but I don't know. That's not the point. The point is, I'm very tired of the world.
The point is he can't delay the election. And if that does happen, we should probably start to look into to moving somewhere.
Hold up. Hold up. Because he can delay the election because he is the commander-in-chief and he does have access to the military and federal troops. And, like, Congress can, like, put up a fit, but like put up a fight, but...
But they would have to approve it, though, because it defaults.
Okay, but what does he? Because like I'm pretty sure that like the president has in the past like launched wars without congressional approval, and also if he does, and Congress is like, well, you can't do that, who's gonna fucking stop him? Like actually, in there were primary elections in New York City and Washington D.C. at the start of the protests, at the start of the uprising, and like. Like federal agents, or not federal agents, but like local police were gassing people who were in line to vote because it was after curfew, even though curfew specifically had an exemption for people who were going out to vote. But they gassed people and arrested people who were trying to vote already, and no one was fucking talking about it because, like you said, there's all of these distractions.
Right.
And so I feel like things like that are test runs, you know, for like once we get closer to the November election. Like, what is he going to do? Like,
I think the thing that would be why that would be too risky for everybody? Is it the Republican Party in general in Congress would be worried about that sort of act because it would become something where he stands singularly from both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. At that point, he has made that decision purely by himself. And you would also think, too, that the military, who he is in command of, would say, okay, wait, this is seeming a bit too much now, you know, because
I don't know. I think that you're giving Republicans in the House and Senate way too much credit. Like,
but I mean, that would literally, I mean, once, because that would set off even more guerrilla warfare, which would tank the Republican Party for, I mean, which they're already in shambles, would tank the Republican Party for the foreseeable future, you know, because they'd be like, well, I mean, people would be like, okay, yeah, this party is, and we know it's already, you know, at the very least supports fascism or lets it happen. And I mean, at that point now you're basically saying, yeah, and we've got a dictator now, guys. So enjoy your descent into complete and utter chaos. And I mean, not to say we're not already on the edge of that,
I think that the safest thing we can do as people is to assume that there's not going to be like a valid election in November, that no matter what happens, like Trump will do something, because like Trump knows, I feel like I've said this on the podcast before, I've definitely said it before, like Trump believes based on Mueller's investigation that he cannot be prosecuted for as many crimes while he is in office. As soon as he's voted out, he is going to be prosecuted and imprisoned, and so will everyone that he has claimed to care about.
But doesn't that kind of bring up the other option, though, whereas maybe that's the feeler he's putting out there? Because the other rumor is he's going to quit before he has the chance. And would that maybe put him in a position where he would say, look, if I step down here and I quit, can I make a deal that says I'm not going to be prosecuted for my mini crime?
He will never do that. He will never do that. No, I think that the safest thing we can do is to assume that there will not be a valid election in November, and to prepare for what's going to happen beyond that, which is why I'm going to a shooting range this weekend. So that's fun and great, and I'm definitely not terrified of that.
The sad part is, no, that's funny you bring that up, because I have never been a gun person, right? But there's a thought in my head that's like, well, our leftists, and especially, you know, people who are being targeted now, I mean, with, you know, with idiots like Ted Cruz, you know, spearheading these, you know, things about that Antifa are terrorists, blah, blah, blah. You know, my thought is, are you going to have to see more people be armed? And I thought to myself, the reason why I could never, not that I would be considering buying one anyways, but I thought I could never because of, if we're getting to another problem that's going on right now, mental illness.
I was going to say, like, if you buy a gun, like, I'm shooting you before you have the chance to shoot yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
I just don't want you to buy a gun.
No, and that's exactly, and I would never, but I was thinking, you know how you go through, like, late night thoughts where you're thinking, well, should people start to think about these things? And
then I think people absolutely should, like, yeah. Sorry, continue.
No, I know, but that's, you're exactly right. The thought in my head is, you know, I consider myself in a decent, you know, like, I mostly okay compared to what I used to be with my mental health. But yet I still know that it's too easy and too simple for when that one time gets bad. And I'm like, I could never, literally never have a gun in my house. It would be too easy. And so there's a lot of people I think who probably suffer from that as well.
I think that there is something to be said for not having a gun in your house, but having like a friend in the area that you can go to a range with who could either keep a gun at their house or keep it locked up at the range. So you can develop the skill set that you can use, like, if there was an emergency, there was just no other alternative, but you don't have that possibility, which is probably what I'm going to end up doing, because I also, like, I have not had it, like, as intensely as you have, but I've definitely had suicidal thoughts before, and I definitely, like, don't want to even risk it.
Yeah. No, it's totally, that's, you know, in my head I just go, no, there's literally no way I could ever do that safely. I would scare myself, plain and simple. I don't want to do that. Like, I want to, you know, I want to, you know, not do that to my family, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, and then it brings up another interesting thing about all this, you know, with, not interesting thing, a really sad thing, to be honest, which is, you know, that right now I think we're going to see that unfortunately get worse. Is that it's terrible because we're seeing that, you know, 1,000 lives on average or more are dying every day of COVID. in America. And on top of that, you have even more people per day dying of overdose and suicide right now. And I'm not saying every single one of those things has contributed to the pandemic or what's going on, but I can, with, I mean, you know, the pandemic is, like we've talked about, with, you know, what's going on with the protests and such going around this country. There's a lot of things going on, a lot of things contributing to all this. And it's a really hectic time. And, you know, I know so many times for me, you know, I'll read the news every day, and I don't know if that's a healthy thing or not. I know that if I don't, though, I'll go crazy. So I might as well just, you know, dive in. I'm always looking for bright spots in the middle of everything. And there aren't always, you know, bright spots. In fact, one day you get great news, and the next day you get news where you just go, okay, can we just not today, you know? But it's a very interesting time too, because everything's been politicized so heavily. And for instance, you know, my sister-in-law was back in early March was admitted to the hospital with COVID, and she was on oxygen for multiple days, and she made a recovery. You know, right now we have so many things though in the news. She was put on hydroxychloroquine. And right now we have these things coming through, and, you know, right now it's such a heavily politicized thing. We have these crazy people saying demon sperm and alien DNA is, you know, part of medicine, and then they're touting this drug. And I don't, you know, it's really weird, because from the perspective of somebody, because a lot of people don't, no matter how many people have had COVID around the globe, not everybody knows somebody who has had COVID. And me witnessing it firsthand, it's a weird thing, because I don't know if that's what helped her, but I do know that she was in a bad way, and they end up putting her on that. And it wasn't Z-Pak. They put her on a different antibiotic. And because the doctors here in Bellingham said, well, actually, we have a better idea or a better antibiotic that will work with that. And sure enough, you know, whether it was coincidental or not, she did get better. She made a full recovery. And what's interesting to me is that it's been shot down as crazy talk, because our president is crazy. It's been shot down by scientists, because in some of the studies, especially, they're usually done in seriously ill people, and it hasn't shown any benefit. But yet then there's some studies, even CNN ran one a few weeks ago, that did show that it helped, that it possibly helped some people. I still don't have the answer to that, but I think that the fact that it's being politicized as yes or no, people's bodies do react differently to things as well. So I would hope people keep an open mind about everything. This is not an endorsement by any stretch of hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah. No, this is actually a medical podcast. You should definitely take our word over.
Yeah, do not
doctors.
Take our word. But
buy our supplements.
But what I am saying is, hopefully we can keep an open mind to everything right now, and that some doctors decide, hey, this might be an option to see. It's not always, it's not everything snake oil. That being said, I hope that we're on the road to, we're supposed to be hearing things about the monoclonal antibodies that are supposed to be coming through as well from Eli Lilly and Regeneron. Hopefully that starts to be good. But the interesting thing, this is what I'm going to ask you, Aiden. Did you read the LA Times article regarding immunity shots?
No, I have not.
So this was something that was done a few weeks ago, and I'm paraphrasing a bit when I talk about this. But so a couple scientists in California and other scientists who have supported the idea is that basically what you take is you take the plasma, as they're using for convalescent plasma, with people who are in the hospital. But what you would do is you would manufacture it in a shot, not a vaccine, but a shot. And it would be intramuscular, and you would inject somebody with it, and it would be it could be a preventative for those working on the front lines. It'd be probably, I think they were guessing, around 2 to 4 months of protection. It's not a vaccination. It's just protection, short-term protection.
And we don't know for sure that a vaccine is technically even possible with COVID, given, like, I mean, like, maybe like the flu vaccine, like, it could give you protection for a year, but there are multiple strains already.
Yeah, and it's likely boosters are going to be more than likely needed after a year or so. But that would still be considered a vaccination, whereas a shot is short-term protection. It's not, you know, it's antibodies, so they wane. And so so even Fauci admitted that it's an attractive concept, and it's easily scalable, as long as you could have 2 to 4% or whatever of the people who've already had COVID donate their plasma, and it'd be very easy to scale, and it would be, I'm not sure exactly the price, but I think it would be much cheaper than the synthetic antibodies that they're creating right now. And the response was that it didn't really fit the timeline right now, especially with all the money being funneled into vaccinations attempts. And I know our economy's already in a bad position, but like that scares the shit out of me when we are in such a dire situation. And yet when an idea that is generally agreed upon that they believe the efficacy, at least the chances of the efficacy being good with it, are there, and these are scientists like Fauci, who everybody's looked up to from the beginning of this, it's kind of bizarre to me that we would, you know, not try to go down that route. Now, I will say that the other day, though, I was looking, and they did launch a small study, I believe, somewhere on the East Coast, in both prevention, mild cases, and severe cases, where they are doing this. So hopefully, maybe it's taking some shape. But I mean, it is worrisome when those things come up, because we feel like maybe there is an answer, but because financially it doesn't really fit into the whole plan with what we've been putting our money into, the decision is, well, we're not going to follow that because money.
I mean, like, I feel like part of it is, like, there's just so much fucking information that I just tooted. I don't know. Mike picked that up, but I felt it very powerfully. Anyway, it's not the point. Point is, there's, like, so much information that comes out, and then, like, some of it, like, contradicts each other, and some of it, like, there's just, like, so much being researched about COVID, about, like, can it really be spread based on, like, contact with surfaces? Like, how long could it stay on a surface? Like, is it, like, purely aerosol-based? It's, like, and then I was reading a study that says that wearing a mask doesn't just help protect other people, it also helps protect you, because, like, the amount of the virus you receive, right, like, impacts your ability to, like if you only get a tiny dosage of a virus, and the mask filters the rest of it out, like, you have a significantly higher chance of your body being able to fight it off than if you get a very large dose. Like, but a lot of the information, just, like, I feel like I'm still explaining some of those things to people, like every day, it feels like, because, like, the news just doesn't spread. A lot of people have, like, buried their heads in the sand now, or they're just like, I'm just gonna isolate, and I'm gonna learn an instrument, or maybe write a nice, cool fantasy novel, and then I'm gonna merge in a few months and, like, see, like, where we're at. But, like, yeah, I don't know.
And there are caveats to everything, right? Because you're told, I mean, like, we know the mask thing is good, because, for instance, you have, you know, that was a great study that happened accidentally. That lady who was a hairdresser, and she had 140 clients who were all masked. She was masked as well, and she had COVID, and none of them, at least at the point that the article was written, none of them tested positive. And they were all masked up. And that's close proximity masked up. But they were all masked up, and nope, she didn't end up passing
anything. And presumably properly masked up, and not, like, mm-hmm, but those fools at the bus stop who are flirting with me with their masks, like, showing with their nose. Like, no.
Oh, that pisses, by the way. I'll get to that in a minute. But anyways, what I was going to say is the caveats, too, are those people, but also the people who I've seen walking out of town. I've only done curbside pickup since, like, March. Like, besides, like, there's, like, one time I ran into Fred Meyer at, like, late at night, right before it closed, with a mask on, of course. And that was the only time I've been into a store in the last 5 months. And otherwise, I've been, like, you know, in my apartment, I've got, like, a bubble with my mom and my brother. And, you know, we all keep in, you know, conversation with each other about everything that's going on and whatever. And that's it. And then, like, some family in small groups spread apart outside only, you know, and that's a very rare occasion. But I've, you know, gone to curbside pickup at Target, watched people come out, and they have their masks on because they have to. It's a mandate here in Washington. But when they come out, they're touching the bags and they're touching everything, and then they're just taking the mask right off the front of their, and then putting it into their pocket, where I'm sure there's also, you know, that's coming from a germaphobe. So I apologize to all of you that I think all these things through. But that's, to me, just like germs.
I've totally done that when I, like, put it into the pocket, but usually only, like, when I, like, realize I have to eat or drink and I, like, do not have anywhere else to put it, because I'm like, I, like, wear the wrong pants out and I don't have, like, yeah, anyways. So I apologize.
No, but I mean, everybody's doing their best at the end of the day, right? Yeah. Besides people doing it under their noses, those people can go fuck themselves. But
I think that like a lot of people still don't really understand. Like, I don't feel like they're trying to get anybody else sick. They just, like, don't get, like, they've never, like, worn a mask like that before in their entire life, and now all of a sudden everyone's doing it, and there's, like, right and wrong ways to do it. And I feel like I'm biased a little bit because I just was doing a canvassing job for a few weeks before it got shut down because of COVID, but I'm still getting paid. That's completely off topic. I'm rambling. What am I talking about? Oh, yeah. So I was doing canvassing, like, door to door. And, like, so I was talking to a lot of different types of voters for, with a lot of different types of situations. And, like, one door could be, like, a diehard Trump supporter. Then the next door could be, like, an, like, rabid anti-Trumper. The next door could be, like, a socialist who's like, yeah, I'm not fucking voting for Biden. And I'm like, and the next door could be, like, a single mom of three who, like, used to be a Democrat but isn't really sure anymore but, like, just feels, like, sort of disenchanted with the whole political realm. And there were a lot of people that I talked to who were like, yeah, there's, like, I guess this COVID thing going on, but, like, I work, like, two jobs, like, and I just, like, don't have time to read the news. Like, I just don't, like,
right.
So I feel, like, almost, like, blessed that I, like, have a job that is, like, political where I can be engaged, but I know that that's, like, in a lot of ways a privilege more than anything else. Because, like, it's just, like, and, like, a lot of the people that I see on the bus stop are people who, like, who are wearing, like, their masks with their noses out, like, are people who, like, come from, like, lower income backgrounds who don't, like, have, like, the education to, like, analyze, a, like, a study and, like, not much less analyze a bunch of different studies that come out over a few, period of a few months and, like, understand, like, what, like, a sample size is or, like, things like that. Yeah, so I have, like, a little bit of, like, I have a lot of sympathy for people who, like, don't get it. Like, less sympathy for people who are, like, actively harming other people by, like, going up and, like, coughing to them or, like, screaming at them, like an inch away from their face because, like, they told them to wear a mask. Like, and I even have sympathy for the people who, like, maybe, like, started up at the pandemic wearing a mask but were convinced by the propaganda that they're consuming, right. Whether it's via Alex Jones or, like, Donald Trump or, like, whoever, that, like, wearing a mask is, like, actually dangerous for their health, or it's a sign of weakness, or it's, a, like, a form of tyranny. Like, because, like, the mask issue did not used to be a political issue. Like, at the start of the pandemic, it was not politicized at all. Like, the even, like, when, like, media networks were latching onto the story of, like, oh, like, the partisan divide between mask wearing. And, like, if you read the studies that they were citing, like, there was a tiny discrepancy between Republicans and Democrats. There was a bigger discrepancy between men and women with mask wearing than there was between Republicans and Democrats. But, like, it was still framed as a partisan issue because, like, partisan issues can get views. You know, partisan issues can, like, motivate people to anger, to get out of the polls. The same, like, instinct that we get, like, why we like to watch sport teams, like, battle it out, because, like, this us versus them narrative can be compelling to people. But it wasn't really reflective of the reality, but, like, feel like that's a narrative that's been built up, and a lot of people, like, have been sort of caught in the crossfire. Like, they have been convinced by, like, this, like, messaging that, like, wearing a mask, like, is, like, either a form of tyranny or, like, it's like, just a way of controlling people's bodies. Like, it's kind of like when we talk about how, like, Donald Trump sending in, like, federal troops in, like, one instance, or, like, tear gassing protesters, or not protesters, but people, like, in line to vote, like, is, like, a test incident. Like, a lot of people are sort of have been convinced that, like, if the government can convince you to wear a mask and force you and, like, force, like, private business owners to, like, force people to wear masks, like, what can they do next? You know, like, that's sort of, like, the mindset that a lot of people have. And, like, that's all, like, propaganda. And I feel, like, a lot of sympathy for people who have been sucked into that, even though, like, a lot of them, like, when they're actively trying to endanger people's health, that's where I'm like, okay, fuck off, okay? But, like, yeah, and I still, like, wish that they wouldn't do it, obviously, but it's just, like, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. I'm melting my chair.
Well, there's also another side to this, actually, which is where there was misinformation in the beginning, too, which I think set us up for this, which was the fact that, and even Fauci admits that the reason why he said, told people not to wear masks was not because he thought that they weren't necessary, but because they were worried about the lack of masks for medical personnel. And that sounds like a great thing, but we have to remember that in these sort of situations, everybody has the right to protect themselves. And so that's, when you hear that sort of misinformation, it's tough because people go, well, you told us this in the beginning, much like you said earlier with the CDC, who said, why would you even, I mean, like, it's good to wash your hands, right, after you touch stuff. Why would you even say we're not sure if it's spread across certain surfaces? Like, it's just better to wash your hands, everybody, after you touch, you know, common areas where the public is touching. So, but they come out with that, and then people, I know, I mean, the next day I started to hear people say, well, it can't be spread on surfaces anyways. So, like, nobody has to worry about that. And you're like, oh, my God. Like, I mean, like, just wash your hands, like, please.
Yeah, the CDC, like, changed their mind about that, so now I'm just gonna, like, shit out of my hands and then run around and, like, spread it everywhere, and, like, I'm not gonna give a fuck. Yeah, and, like, I think that, like, not even just, like, the confusion factor with related to what Fauci was saying, and, like, the ethics of, like, not, everyone has a right to protect themselves, there's, like, two big issues that I feel like come out of that. Like, well, the first is that, like, it just, like, a lot of people, like, even people who, like, may have trusted Fauci or were neutral on him and the CDC, like, probably, like, felt like, well, they, like, openly admitted to having lied about this thing, like, what else could they be lying about?
Right.
And I feel like that, like public trust is so fucking crucial, and I feel like in some ways, like, at this point, it's kind of like a lost cause, like, gaining back public trust, like,
yeah, no, exactly.
Because, like, no matter how trustworthy you are, like, people will manufacture a narrative around you. But also, like, the issue that I have is, like, part of the reason that, like, he had to do that in the first place, and, like, the CDC had to do that in the first place, is because, like, there wasn't enough PPE for, like, hospital staff. There still isn't enough PPE for hospital staff, but part of that's because, like, hospitals are, like, often running at, like, near capacity, like, because this is capitalism, we have to be efficient, you know? Like, mask manufacturers don't produce enough masks to have an efficient stockpile in case of I've been drinking, a Mike's Hard pineapple mandarin lemonade, and it's making me a bit burpy. there it goes again. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. So, but, like, hospitals run at near capacity, so we don't have a lot of extra ventilators or extra beds in case of pandemic situations. And manufacturers, like, medical equipment manufacturers, manufacture as needed, like, as requested by hospitals, which, again, means a sudden influx like this is something that our system cannot handle. And basically what I'm saying is that, like, I don't think that capitalism is more efficient than other systems. Actually, I think it's really inefficient and wasteful. But, like, even in this case, like, quote-unquote efficiency is not a good thing. And that's kind of a tangent. But basically, what I want to bring this back to is fuck capitalism. And
yeah. Well, and the thing is, too, is it's weird because, like, we live by regulations and we die by regulations, too. Because, like, there was a stockpile of masks that were beyond their expiration date. And the reason why is because the elastic band that goes around is it basically it no longer has the right elasticity, and so it can't be deemed safe anymore, as we see with, you know, a lot of things with expiration dates. The thing was that because those were deemed expired, there was a lot of talk about, well, can we just put new bands on them? And they're like, well, these are expired. They're expired. And I don't know exactly what happened with that. That was back in March and April. But that's, you know, those regulations are things where, you know, the decision was, well, we'd rather have people wearing, you know, these ones that we have to make sure we wash and blah, 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 blah. And then have those repurposed with new elastic bands or something like that.
At the very least, I feel like those masks should have been donated to, like, a local community organization, right? That does, like,
yeah, exactly. And it's I mean, look, I mean, it happens in everyday, you know, even pre-COVID and whatever, is when you look at, you know, grocery stores who dump all this perfectly fine food because it's not, you know, because it's no longer allowed to be sold, and yet they dump it rather than giving it to communities who might need it. And that's, yeah, that's capitalism right there. You know, regulations, I think, are going to, although people will jump on me probably and say, okay, but safety, but, you know, but we have gone.
Overall, I am very pro-regulation.
Oh, so am I. Like, yeah, I want to make clear.
And I'd rather have, like, in an ideal situation, I'd rather, like, quote-unquote expired masks be thrown out than used if they are unsafe. It's that, like, we don't have any, like, elasticity, if you pardon the pun, but for, like, emergency situations. And we'll often, like, it's kind of like we enforce laws based on the letter of the law and not, or the letter of the regulation and not on, like, critical context. And we aren't willing to, like, say, okay, like, this is an emergency situation.
Right.
Like, we need to, like, learn how to adapt. And that's part of the issue with laws. And I'd like to talk a little bit about my buddy Peter Kropotkin, who is a anarchist writer from the late 1800s, early 1900s. He wrote a 2-page pamphlet about...
Your buddy is very old.
He's very old, yes, but he is the love of my life. But he wrote like a 2-page pamphlet. Like, it's a short read. It's about the law, and he basically, in it, he argues that laws are, okay, I love this, okay, that laws are inherently anachronistic, that laws are, but basically, like, people make agreements with each other. People, like, human beings and communities come to consensus, like, within, like, their communities, and as community members change, as people, like, come into the community or leave the community or die or get born, like the ground rules for how a society operates will naturally shift. A law is when, like, you take one community's set of rules and organizations and inscribe it in stone and then, like, use that as the as the text through which future generations are judged and the expectations that future generations have to be held to. They are inherently anachronistic in that manner. That's kind of a side note. It's like somewhat relevant. I just like talking about my buddy Peter Kropotkin.
No, but I mean, that's a very good point to bring up, because I think that's what I was about to say, actually, when I am somebody who, you know, with some of my friends who have, we have similar social opinions, but we have these little bit differentiating opinions on regulations, because maybe they're a little bit more toward the libertarian side of, you know, regulations. And where I'm like, no, regulations are important. For instance, if, you know, less regulations we see, and then you end up having a bunch of food that ends up, you know, with, oh, salmonella recall. We already have enough of that with regulations. And that's just one example. There's plenty. But no, what you said is exactly, or, you know, or what your friend said is exactly right, that you have to be able to adapt certain things, including regulations, because during this time right now is a time when we need to be able to shift those. And even in things that seem, in my opinion, and people probably will definitely, some people will definitely disagree with me on this, but even in things as, polarizing as vaccinations, where in my opinion, you need to be able to look at some of these and go, hey, we've done this test, it's safe. Now we need to find a way to, when people are saying, is it going to be too fast? Is it not going to be safe enough? My opinion is you got to sometimes throw a little caution to the wind. And, you know, when you have something that has been so dire that we have right now. And I think that there's this, you know, they bring up when Gerald Ford was president, I'm trying to think of what year that was. It was in the 60s, early 70s, and right after Nixon. And they had the H1N1 pandemic then. And they came out with the shot, and I believe 450 people got, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, but Guillain-Barre syndrome. And I believe 3 or 4 people died somewhere around there, but don't quote me on the numbers. It's just in my head from reading it the other day. And you go, you know, people are definitely worried because, you know, down the road, what are we going to see? Commercials? If you or a loved one had a vaccination during the COVID and they've experienced this, you might be entitled to a settlement. And that's what they're afraid of, you know, right? But 450 people getting that compared to potentially 50,000, 100,000 or more people dying seems like a risk I'd be willing to take.
And a lot of people, like, if you make them aware of the risk, like, this is a new vaccination, mm-hmm. like honestly, like, I would probably, like, take that vaccination, like, even knowing the risk, like, even
absolutely.
If it's costing my life, because, like,
yeah,
like, the even, like, I'm not, like, in a particularly high-risk category, and I do try to self-isolate, like, as opposed to, like, mm-hmm. a first responder, like, if, like, me getting a vaccination can give people, like, critical information, like, to make the vaccine better in the future, like, it's just, I think that's worth it for humanity.
Yeah, and I think, too, that, you know, when you look at the, which I'm a geek about, I love the fact that two of the leading vaccines right now are Moderna and Pfizer, which are both messenger RNA, which I think is going to be really exciting as we move forward.
Such a fucking nerd.
Yeah, as we move
continue.
move forward with vaccinations, I think that's going to be awesome. And the anti-vaxxers are listening to this right now going, okay, we're done listening to these two.
As if anti-vaxxers listen to this.
Right, yeah. And if you are, seriously, go fuck yourself. But and that's okay, too, because it's self-love. No, I mean, for real though, I think it's going to be awesome if these, you know, they show such promise, in non-human primates. The Moderna, showed that it blocked both the disease in both, nasally and, in the, lungs, which is, you know, I realize it's non-human primates, but still that's good, good news. And what's cool about that is that messenger RNA is so much easier and faster to produce. So right now, the caution to throw to the wind might not be, oh, let's speed this up, although I would love that. But it would be maybe let's manufacture a ton right now. And if it doesn't work, if it ends up phase 3 doesn't work, then, oh, well, we lose that money. But at least we definitely plan to have people inoculated by, because I can tell you right now, once we get to November, you can have all of the restrictions and guidelines in the world, but grandma and grandpa are going to want to see their kids on Thanksgiving. And I'm not saying that everybody's going to be like that, but enough people are. And we need to have something in place, whether it be at the very least, you know, I do think today with the great news we heard about today was the fact that they're going to be awarding a $5 million grant to an expedited at-home test. The expedited research into an at-home test where people will be able to get the results very quickly and they'll be able to do it themselves. And I think that's a great start because again.
I don't know. I don't necessarily trust people to do, like, at-home tests for anything. Like, imagine if you have to do, like, an at-home, like, STD test for yourself or something. Like,
let's hope this is better than that. But that's, like, the first step, right? That could be a decent thing because, you know, like I said, a get-together for the holidays, you might all be able to take a test. You get the picture. The second thing would be is do we finally move forward with something like the immunity shot, even though it doesn't fit into the financial calendar with all this? Or do we just speed up the vaccine process and get it at least, at the very least, to the at-risk and frontline workers as quick as we can? And I think that, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic that might happen, actually. But because otherwise it's, yeah, you know, it's going to be bad because a good portion of people will do the right thing, but it only takes a small portion of people to create a whole giant mess. And that's where I think, you know, you can, if I get five people together right now, we talk about COVID, we might all have similar ideologies, similar lives and whatever, and we will still disagree on some very, very simple things when it comes to COVID.
And really? Because I feel like most of my, like, well, actually, I should scratch that. Because my roommates have been, like, going on Tinder and, like, going out to, like, friends' houses to, like, play video games and, like.
So that's my, it might be small things, but that's where a lot of people disagree, right? So you think about 320 million people and you go, that's hard to get everybody on the same page, and you can't expect everybody to, when it was, you know, the first the information was we're going to do this for 2 weeks, then it was 2 months, then it was 3 months. Now we're here, we are at,
And now it could be fucking forever, you know? Because American leaders have been basically, like, I also feel like that's part of the reason, like, because, like, Trump's justification for postponing or delaying the election was COVID, and because he doesn't trust mail-in voting. And, like, if we're just always in a pandemic, no election, Trump stays in office.
That's a conspiracy mind.
The thing is, like, I don't think that, like, I think that that's, like, how his brain works. I don't think that, like, it would work necessarily, but, like, I think that is, like, how, I didn't think that is a thought that has probably crossed his mind. Like, I would not be surprised.
I would say the difference there is, because we know that there's going to be some sort of, one way or the other, some sort of relief. So I think more with him is that he feels if he can postpone, let's just say he even believes it, which I actually will say, you and I will disagree on this. I don't think he believes he can postpone it. But let's just say.
Hold up. I need to fact check you because are you like Trump, like you're probably familiar with this, but he is from a ideological like background that believes in like the power of positive thinking or like that sort of Christian mind thought where like that emphasizes right. That like if you believe something is true, if you say something is true, it will be true. Like that's something that people don't understand about Trump is that he does not care. Like fact checking Trump or calling him out on his quote unquote lies does not matter because he doesn't view them as lies right. Or like falsehoods. He believes that what he says is
by nature
true because like truth is like constructed.
I agree with that, but I don't believe that he actually thinks that he can stop the election.
He totally thinks he can, but we're gonna continue.
But if he does, which you could be right, if he does, my feeling is that it's actually more so that, because if he feels there's this timeline for, say a vaccination or something, if he saves the world, he believes that potentially saves his presidency. Because let's be real right now, he has... I shouldn't say this. I really shouldn't because I said there was no way in hell Hillary was going to lose. But let's be... Okay, do you want... can I say it, Aiden?
Be complacent. Not be complacent. Do not look at polls.
You know that I dislike Biden, but I'm voting Biden, okay? Not because I like Biden, but because I am voting against Trump, right? So...
Of course.
Here's my opinion. People on the West Coast... They didn't like, and really both coasts, the people who didn't like Hillary, for the most part, I believe is because we felt she was a shill, right? Whereas people in the Midwest, I truly believe, not to say people in the Midwest are all sexist. I'm just saying, I think that the general thought, I think it was more that she was a woman in certain places where it's more of a,
Have you ever been in the Midwest?
I have not. And so
been in the Midwest. No. Keep talking.
But I mean, well,
me sitting here in my University of Michigan t-shirt. Okay. Continue, Brandon. Yes. I'd love to hear your opinions on this.
Well, but my opinion is I think that in the more blue collar states and in the more in the Rust Belt, that there was more of a sexist feeling toward Hillary being president. Because why would Michigan just go, besides the fact that she neglected Michigan, but Michigan goes red, that's ridiculous. Ohio, you kind of get. Pennsylvania going red, ridiculous. I think that
it definitely has more to do with economics, and part of that is because I do canvassing, so I talk to a lot of people who were like, the last time I voted was for Obama, I was so optimistic, but like now I just think that both parties are the same, like nothing gets better, like... Like, I appreciate Affordable Care Act, but otherwise, like, nothing has changed in my life. So they either, a lot of Obama voters just completely tuned out of politics, just gave up, or they didn't go to the polls, or, like, they wanted to vote for Trump for, like, maybe this time. Like, maybe, like, something entirely new. But, like, I also talked to a lot of former Trump voters who were like, yeah, this is still bullshit. Trump isn't doing fucking shit for us either, so, like... So some of those former Trump voters are not going to be voting in this upcoming election at all either. I feel like we're going to have like low voter turnout rates among that demographic because there's a lot of people who are just completely disillusioned with the political process. I think that there's definitely like some sexism, but I feel I've never been to the Pacific Northwest, but I've heard about like some of those folks in like Seattle, in the east side of the state of Washington and Oregon, the rural parts of Oregon.
But what I will say, is the eastern parts of Washington... No, I actually, by the way, too, I want to thank you for telling me that, because mm-hmm. I do live in a bubble in the Pacific Northwest that is a liberal bubble, and that is... What I'll say about eastern Washington is that the difference is eastern Washington is unabashedly conservative, and yes, they are definitely sexist as well. Not all of them. I apologize to the eastern Washington
There's
people who are not...
There's some of that in the Midwest for sure, but, like, right. I think the but economic motivations are bigger.
What I'm talking about, though, is, I guess, more the middle ground people who can flip the state, and that's what I wonder. But I think you might actually... No, in fact, you being there, you probably actually are right. And so then I apologize to the Midwest, by the way.
Thank you.
Yes. And I do live in a bubble, so yeah, so I do apologize. What I will say, though, is regardless, I think that Biden appeals more so to some of those voters than Hillary did. And even though we still don't really like him, pretty much in the same way we didn't like Hillary. But I do believe that he will... I have a hard time believing Pennsylvania doesn't vote for Biden. I mean, you know, it's a state that he even has connections to, although it is interesting. I did read a thing today that said that they were voting Biden only because they dislike Trump, not because they like Biden. That surprised me a bit in Pennsylvania. But, you know, Michigan, you're in Michigan. What would be your gut intuition right now? Do you say that Biden wins Michigan, or do you say that Trump does what he did in 2016?
I am not 100% sure. The complicating factor, I think, is our governor, Gretchen Whitmer, who is very, very, very divisive.
But she's very Democrat, though.
She's very Democrat, but she also is one of the few governors that did not cave to public pressure to lift up the stay-at-home order before she felt that it was safe. Mm-hmm. And so there were, like, those protests in Lansing where, like, there were, like, armed people storming the Capitol and, like, screaming into people's faces, burning effigies of her, and she did not cave. And, like, a lot of people think she's a fucking hero for that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think she does not listen to, like, the citizens or, like, and that also, like a lot of places in Michigan were hit economically very hard. Right. And then there's also, like, the fact that she's one of the people who's being considered for Biden's VP pick. And I don't know, like, given that level of divisiveness, like, where, like, how that would influence things. And also, like, yeah. In Michigan, the fact that, like, there are, like, there's just, like, some interesting elections happening. Like, Gary Peters, the senator, is up for re-election, and he's facing off against this guy named John James, who is a rabid Trump supporter, a little crazy, and also a black guy. So, like, a lot of, I spoke to a lot of black voters who were like, yeah, I usually vote Democrat, but, like, there's also, like, a black man who's running, and, like, haven't really looked much farther than that. Also, like, John James has more popular support than Gary Peters, who has very little name recognition. He's kind of, like, a senator that's kind of there.
Yeah.
And so, like, are people going to be motivated to go to the polls to support Gary Peters? And then, because one of the things that when I'm canvassing, like, if someone says, yeah, I'm not voting for Biden, like, we don't try to get them to the polls to support Biden. We try to get them to the polls to support down ballot candidates. And then hopefully while they're there, they're like, you know what, fuck it, I'm here anyways. I'll check the box for Biden. Like, right. Even if they aren't motivated to go to the polls for Biden, if you can get them to the polls for other reasons, whether because, like, encouraging them to do a civic duty, just because it's something to do, or encouraging them to, like, support their friends or family members who want to vote, or get to support, like, a specific issue or a ballot measure or a smaller candidate, and then hopefully they'll vote for Biden then. But there is like a big pull for some people towards like this John James guy, and for other smaller candidates who are Republicans. And how is that going to impact? So there's just a lot of complicating factors.
Well, and there's, and actually it kind of, we're in a little bit of that same boat here in Washington too, where Jay Inslee has had very, you know, he's been a lot of talk about things, and that's been some people love it, some people hate it. I have grown tired of it, mainly because I love what he says, and then I hate the follow-up, which is, you know, not mainly, not so much with COVID, but about the protest. I hate the fact that there was that federal troops were allowed in Washington. Like, I thought we had a better backbone than that. I thought that Inslee would sit there and go, no, not here. Like, we don't do that here. Like, you know, there's this Cascadia pride, right? It's like, we don't allow that shit here. And that really pissed me off, to be honest. But there's this other part of Inslee too, where is that I think that he's very smart when it comes to the environment. And I believe that if Biden were to win in November, I believe that that Inslee will be in his cabinet, which means that we will be left with the lieutenant governor, which is a race between pretty much Denny Heck, and I voted for the other guy, Marco, but Denny Heck would be the leading Democrat. And because we're in a state, by the way, for those of you who don't know, that where if you vote two Democrats, they will be on the ballot together. And if it's the top two are on the ballot. So if it's a Republican and a Democrat, like it usually is, it'll be Democrat versus Republican. If it's two Democrats, two Republicans, they'll go against each other. And so I voted, and I usually do vote for the other Democrat so that maybe we have that chance. So we would look at potentially having the lieutenant governor in as an interim and then having another special election. I've heard rumblings that Rick Larson here in Washington, who's been a very popular, not one of my favorites, but a very popular centrist Democrat in Washington, that he would be running for a governor. And, but I wonder if that brings it a little bit, as the more we hear about the fact that we go, well, Biden wins, Inslee's headed to D.C., how does that change everybody's opinion on this upcoming election? Because there are a lot of people in the middle ground who are saying Inslee's been a mess through all this. And the truth is that Inslee has had some great things to say, even things that I've gone, yeah, that's it. And then I've gone, dude, you speak a lot, but you don't do a lot, you know? And that's tough. And that's kind of, you know, the calling card of most politicians, to be fair. But I think that we saw, and this will be probably more for next episode because we're running out of time here. But, you know, because I think I'd love to talk about the potential balkanization of the United States. But we saw those things start to happen when we had these regional breakdowns of the western states, the lakes. And then we had these, you know, these agreements of, oh, we're going to look out for each other when it comes to COVID and whatever. And it looked like a balkanization on a map. And I think that kind of gave a few of us who are into the Cascadia thing and whatever, we thought, well, you know, and that means that, no, I don't believe we're going to be Cascadia anytime soon. But we have a different mentality here. We're going to act somewhat more like nation states. We're going to say we're going to protect our communities that are very much different than other parts
Democratic
of this country.
Democratic confederalism for the win, yeah?
And instead, what happened was we allowed federal troops to come into Portland, the worst being Portland, by the way, and I feel terrible for the people, and I also want to, you know, totally give credit to everybody who is still fighting down there, the Antifa down there, and who are fighting against this absolutely horrendous thing that is happening in Portland. But it happened in Seattle, and it scared the living shit out of me, because I go, you know, I'm sitting here proud of, you know me, I'm a sports fan. I'm proud of all things Seattle. I'm proud of, you know, I love the Pacific Northwest, and I'm going, am I seriously going to have to think about moving? You know, I mean, you know, because this is not the country, the state. This is nothing that I've known my whole life. And I realize we all go through changes and these things all happen. But it gets more and more disappointing and sad when you see it happen right there in front of you. And luckily up here where I live, we've had a lot of peaceful protests that I hate that term, by the way, because I have no problem with the people who are causing, you know, because you gotta cause shit sometimes
also,
to get
like,
things done.
Like, I don't think that, like, smashing in the windows of a police car is, like, violent. But, like,
no, not at all. And the thing is that up here, we haven't done that. So when I say that, I want to make clear is just the fact that I don't have the first, like, I don't have the first person perspective. When I went through the protests going on here, it was all down the sidewalks, and there's no threat to me up here in Whatcom County whatsoever. But I still have these, you know, we're an hour and a half from Seattle. I love the city of Seattle. And the fact that I saw both Mayor Durkin and Governor Inslee sort of say things like, what Trump wants is confrontation, so just be good. I hate that. That really fucking annoys the living shit
Trump out of me. Trump is going to send federal troops into Democrat-run cities, like, no yeah. matter how confrontational the protesters are going to be. If they don't get that it's just a fucking excuse to, like, diminish the authority of mm-hmm. governors that are critical of Trump, they need to, like, take a fucking history class, or I'll whack them with this hard pineapple mandarin lemonade bottle.
Fuck, turn into a Molotov cocktail. So before we go here, I do know you started to do, on a brighter note, you mentioned instruments, stuff like that, but you did start to take up something during, I did as well, but I'll let you go first.
What can you just tell me what it was that you took up? What hobby?
I started tattooing. Yeah. Yeah. I have a tattoo kit, like, right here next to me.
Oh my God. I gotta go to Bellingham and have you give me a tattoo.
Yes, I've tattooed myself like multiple times.
You give me a cascading tattoo.
There you go. I have like on my thumb, I have like an Inukshuk. I have a mountain goat on my left foot.
Oh, that sounds so cool. Oh my God.
I did, that's
a good hobby.
I did the new, because it was a little bit, you know, understated. I did the new Seattle hockey secondary logo. Because, you know, I'm a hockey fanatic, so having that we got a name now is crazy. Seattle Kraken. I did that logo on my above my knee. I did that. I had to do it upside down because it's above my knee, so I had to, like, draw it. And by the way, I've done it all freehand, and for the most part, have come out decently well. So,
who are you tattooing besides yourself?
I've only tattooed myself so far. And then I had like
so cute.
I had like fake skin too that I like practice on. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's been the one fun thing I've been doing during all this madness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the hobby that you mentioned of me, I've been trying to teach myself embroidery. Mm-hmm. So I actually have a big curtain for my room that I, like, took down, and I've been, like, embroidering little designs on.
Very nice.
I want to fill this whole thing. The audience tragically cannot see it, but I'm gonna have this whole thing filled up with designs eventually.
That's very, very cool. I could not do that. I don't have the patience, which is crazy because a lot of people have been telling me about the tattoos. They're like, I would not have the guts or the patience to do that. And I'm like, yeah, no, I get halfway through and I'm like, am I really doing this permanently to myself? Like, what if this fucks up? And it's like, I literally did the last one like 2 a.m. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna do the logo. And I start just like drawing it out and I'm like, it actually turned out, I'll send you a picture.
Yes, please do. Post it on the Instagram.
Yeah, for sure. I love your embroidery stuff. That's looking good.
Thank you. I'm trying my best. Well, okay. I'm not trying my best, but like I'm trying a little bit. It's a work in progress.
Well, that's good. And anybody going through a rough time right now, by the way, too, you know, I hope everybody is doing okay out there. And it's not easy. None of this is easy. I go through days where I sit there and say to myself, hey, it's okay. We just have to hold out and then things are going to be better. You know, and that goes for everything, not just COVID, but also the things that are going on with racial inequality and fascism, yeah, which pretty much is the overwhelming, thing there. You know, but the truth is then you have the next day where you go something, you know, you feel like that little kid who is saying to your parents, please do something, you know, like you just want somebody to just, you just want this. So I know it's tough and, I just hope that everybody who's feeling it, cause it's hard to see those statistics that so many people are losing their lives, by taking their own lives that's a major thing right now that I think is unfortunately going to only become harder to deal with as we move along through all this. So,
and I'm really glad that we recorded this, and I'm really glad we're going to be recording again, hopefully next week, because I have so much shit that I want to get on my chest. But like, I know you have to go to hang out with your brother, and I have like, I feel like I could talk for like 5 fucking hours.
Oh, I know. There's so much stuff to talk about, but it was great, great talking with you today, though, Aiden. And now you have a lot to edit, so have fun with that. And everybody, we're sorry for the long delay, but I think we all needed some time off during this, and we're happy to be back.
For about a month and a half, I was playing Animal Crossing from 9 a.m. in the morning to 2 a.m. that night.
Why are we not friends on Animal Crossing, Aiden?
Huh?
Why are we not friends on Animal Crossing?
I don't fucking know. Like, I didn't even know you had Animal Crossing. Sure I was posting about my Animal Crossing.
Okay, I've been off Twitter a lot. I was
playing obscene amounts of Animal Crossing, literally for like, I don't know how many hours a day it is, but like for like from like 9 a.m. to like 2 a.m. in the morning, almost nonstop. Like even while I was eating and like using the bathroom, like. And you might be wondering, like, what can you do in Animal Crossing for 14 hours or whatever? You figure it the fuck out, guys, okay? You find things to do.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. There are nights where I go, I'm only going to be on for 20 minutes, and then suddenly I am catching fish for about an hour and a half. So, and I'm falling asleep while doing it.
I would, like, play it so much that, like, my eyes were burning and red and twitching, and my mom was, like, legitimately concerned about me, and I, like, was not moving for, like, entire days, weeks at a time, which, like, and at first I was, like, I feel bad because, like, there's all this shit happening in the world, and what am I doing? I'm just playing Animal Crossing. But then I was talking about it with someone, and they were, like, Aiden, that's actually, like, extremely unhealthy. Like, clearly you're, like, have stuff that you need to cope with and aren't ready to cope with. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll have a little bit of compassion for myself. Aiden can have little of self-compassion as a treat.
I will say, too, I live in the Southern Hemisphere on Animal Crossing, so you can come by and see the winter while it's still here at my place. I've been rolling snowballs for the last month, I believe. And you can also come by and see that I've got ice sculptures that are beautiful. And if I may say so myself... And I don't know about you, but my museum with the dinosaurs is complete. Now, not the fish.
Mine is not complete. Okay. I have a few that I need.
Well, we need to be friends on it so we can start to go visit each other's islands. So.
Hell yeah. All right.
Because you got sharks right now. I don't have sharks.
I do have sharks.
I had sharks when I started. Don't you love when you see, I would call them sharky boys. When you see the fin, and you're like, yes, fin! And then
did you get the update? Sorry to all of our listeners who like, you can sign off now. This is basically the episode. We're just going to ramble a little bit about Animal Crossing for a sec before we officially sign off. Did you get the update, the summer update that has, that puts, like, the deep sea diving?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you got that. You could do that in winter, too, still, right?
Oh, yeah. I've got, like...
Because sometimes, like, when you're in the deep sea part, you can, like, see fins more easily, and you can, like, go up near the shark. I like to go behind it and, like, scare the shark away. It's like, yeah, who's a tough boy now, bitch?
That's great. You can't... And I have snow crabs during the winter, so you can go and catch snow crabs, and, yeah, and it's fun. Good stuff. So, yeah, you can even dive for different stuff in the Southern Hemisphere right now. All right, everybody, thank you so much. Do your best to stay dope right now, and we will be back soon.